Is your pup in need of a trim? Or maybe a bath and de-shed are what your pup needs to feel clean and keep your carpets and furniture looking spick and span. Give Dee's Dog Grooming a call today at 509-325-0017. Located conveniently on Garland and Walnut. Again, Dee's Dog Grooming, 509-325-0017. Welcome to Spokane Valley Speaks, hosted by Al Merkel, where we give you the ins and outs of our city and its government to help you make the best decisions for today and for tomorrow. Welcome, Spokane Valley listeners, to another edition of Spokane Valley Speaks. Today, we are going to continue our focus on the election, which is, of course, the number one issue for you and me coming up here in November. With a great interview with one of our current county commissioners who is running for election right now, under a completely different county commissioner setup. I mean, it's very, very different. I'm sure we're going to go into this here in a second, but let me introduce Ms. Mary Cuny.
Well, thank you very much for having me today on your show.
You bet. Thank you for giving us the time and speaking with voters about the concerns that we all have for this upcoming election.
Yes, I think it's very important that people get out and choose to vote and, vote for the candidates that they have, listened to, have researched, and they know that they're going to do the best for them.
Absolutely. And especially at this county level, I think that the county government is kind of a really interesting form of government. It's a part of our government that sometimes people forget about. Other times it really comes into their lives. It's a kind of an interesting one that I don't necessarily know that a lot of people think about, but that's, I think, a great place to start. So could you describe for our listeners what the position of a county commissioner does, and specifically what your position that you're running for is going to represent in the new county commissioner setup?
Yeah. So let's talk currently, we have three county commissioners that have traditionally been elected in their primary in their district. Each of the three commissioners had a district. And then
and we're putting district in quotations here, because as you say, there's a district for the primary, but then in the general election, they're elected countywide. So it's not like they really had to focus on that district specifically, I guess.
You did in the primary, and you do always look at always felt that that was your district that you're representing, as well as the rest of the county. So that was always interesting, for me, as I've been county commissioner since I was appointed back in October of 2017, ran in 2018 which was the next available general election, and then ran in 2020, which was the end of that term. And then now, because of the five commissioner bill that was passed by the state legislature, I'm running now in 2022.
So you've really been running, is what you're saying. You're getting pretty tired? That's a lot of running.
It is a lot of running.
Typically these are supposed to be four-year terms. So you've really kind of gotten the long end of the stick here on this one. But yeah.
I certainly did. So as we look to go to five commissioners, that will now only be by district in the primary and the general. So instead of representing, over 500,000 people, I'll just be representing about 110,000 people, or a little less than that, so we'll just round it to say 100,000 people. So to me, that's, as I said at my State of the County address, and I looked across the room, everyone was, my constituent. And now only 20% of those people would be my constituent. And I felt that was really sad because I've enjoyed, representing entire Spokane County, but also working hard for my district.
Right.
And so now, with the five commissioners, I will just be representing my district. Some people say it gets you closer to your district. I don't think so, because I think as we look at how Spokane County was divided up in the redistricting process, you've got three county commissioners that, will be in districts that are primarily unincorporated county and or city of Spokane Valley. But you're going to have two very city-centric, city of Spokane districts. Mm. They basically took the city of Spokane, divided it down division, and have an east side and a west side. Those county commissioners are going to be making decisions on land use issues in the unincorporated and outside city of Spokane, but yet their constituents are really represented within the city of Spokane. Mm. They're also going to be making decisions on the sheriff and what's happening, you know, with law enforcement. But their constituents are truly, you know, represented by the city of Spokane and the Spokane Police Department,
which is different than the sheriff. Just for our regular listeners may not know some of these differences. So just to point that out, it's important to note that we have the sheriff, that race, which is being currently run, John Knowles against Wade Nelson, who's going to replace it. They cover the county-wide area, which is their primary jurisdiction. They have also some primary jurisdictions by contract in some of the surrounding cities, such as Spokane Valley. Whereas Spokane City has its own police department, which for them, that's their primary jurisdiction. So in other words, what you're saying is we have county commissioners who would be looking at policing outside of where they receive policing and where their constituents receive policing and making decisions about those things without any real basis.
Correct. And then the other piece I like to point out in this new form of government that the legislature, you know, has forced upon us, is that there is no one who's elected countywide. Mm. So, in the city of Spokane, when you have districts for the council members, you still have the mayor who's county citywide and you've got the council presidents that's citywide. And so I just kind of say those citywide positions kind of herd the cats.
Right.
You know, as a way to say it. But in our case, there is no one who's being elected countywide. And a lot of some counties that have chosen to go to a charter county, which means their citizens, you know, went through a process, a freeholder process to decide their form of government. Typically, you'll see that there's a countywide individual that's elected. Again, the state legislature forced this upon us. They didn't ask us what form of government we wanted. They just said, this is how we're going to do it.
Right. Another episode of the saga of Olympia controlling our fate, just kind of throwing a wrench at us. Hey, take this, Spokane. You guys can live with that. But like you say, it makes sense to have an at-large candidate because that person then has incentives to create deals because they have to balance all the needs of the different districts. Whereas what we're talking about currently, like, and you talked about this a little bit, like that lament that you made at the very beginning, that now you'll be focused in on the needs of your district. That's the most important number one priority for you. I mean, in a way, that's sort of good for us to have a person that's focused in on our needs over here in Spokane Valley. So I'm not too unhappy about that. But like you say, that there's going to be some rebalancing that needs to happen. And I'm sure there's going to be some fights at the county commissioner level.
Yes, I'm sure it's going to be interesting, the dynamics as we move forward after this election and see how it plays out.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I'm glad we kind of covered, you know, the big changes that have happened in the job. But just for our listeners in general, what do you actually do? You know, what do the county commissioners actually do on a day-to-day basis, on a meeting-to-meeting basis, however you want to describe it?
Yeah. So tradition, you know, typically, you know, our Mondays and Tuesdays, we have our meetings, you know, where we discuss issues within the county.
And those are public meetings for folks who want to attend them.
Correct. Those are public meetings. Because Spokane County has over 50 departments, around 2,000 employees. And so we really are the legislative as well as the administrative side of the house. So we direct the CEO as to the things that are going on within Spokane County. Any contracts are coming before the commissioners. And so those go, you know, we'll get briefed on them and agree to them. And then we'll appear on our 2 o'clock consent agenda on Tuesday afternoons. And then once we do all of that, then we're also on several, you know, committees and boards across the county. So from the airport board to the health district to the Valley Chamber. One of us is a member of the Valley Chamber Board as an ex officio member to GSI. You know, so there's I don't know, it's a list of probably about 30 of those types of boards and commissions that we sit on.
And these are voting members. So you guys actually make decisions on those boards, or at least are a part of those decisions.
Yes. For most of those boards, like Valley Chamber, where there is an ex officio, so we're a non-voting member.
Right.
But like with GSI, Spokane County is a voting member. Because, you know, we use GSI, Greater Spokane Incorporated, as kind of our economic development arm. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we put our economic development funding into GSI, as well as then with our new PDAs, public development authorities that we've established across the county. So those are the things that, you know, are really important because, you know, for us to you know, get revenue, we really have to grow our sales tax revenue. So how you do that is by growing your economy. Mm. And so those are the things that we really look at as means of future revenue growth opportunities.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, it's important to grow that revenue because then you can provide more services. The county, for instance, has a whole lot of roads to take care of, a whole lot of roads in places that there aren't a whole lot of people, which means that you need a tax base in order to take care of those roads. And, you know, that may not mean a lot to some of us listeners here, but it's that one time when you're driving, you know, out down to Coeur d'Alene Casino or, you know, out by Rockford and there's a ginormous pothole in this place that you're like, I must be at least 20 miles from the nearest house. That's when that county money is really important.
No, it's very true. And we have about 2,500 miles of roadway in Spokane County that we need to take care of. So it is truly important. And as we know, roads are a huge issue. It's right. Really important for us to have the roads in good working order for, you know, law enforcement, for first responders, all of that, as well as our citizens. And our citizens, you know, demand it. So, and rightfully so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, before we kind of move past this, the only thing I wanted to really ask, you know, we've talked about the changes in incentives from thinking countywide to now having to think district. And we talked about how that may lead to some fights. So I think what's really important for voters right now is to hear, what is your approach to building consensus on this new council? How are you going to seek, you know, to really fight for the needs of your district? Because obviously you can't do that by yourself.
No, you definitely have to collaborate. I mean, it is going to be, and that's one of the things I think that people have seen my style, personal leadership style, over the course of the, you know, several years that I've been commissioner, is to be that collaborator, bring people together, bring them to consensus so we can make good decisions to move our community forward. And so with the five commissioners, we're going to have to do that same thing. Everyone may be coming at it from a different perspective, but in the end, we've got to be really looking at what's best for our community. And so I think those are some of the things that in my time as commissioner that truly have kind of catapulted me into leadership in lots of other organizations that I'm part of, you know, with, you know, on the health district, I've been the chair of the board for the last 2 years. With our Washington State Association of County Commissioners, I'm our first vice president, and pending the election in November, I would become president in November of that organization. So that's county commissioners across the state. So they see my leadership style, my bringing people together, not being divisive, where it's, you know, how do you bring people together? Because we've got to go forward in the same direction. And we're not all going to agree, and that's okay. But we all have to figure out how we come together for that common good to move our communities forward.
And just as a question, I've heard rumors of how many councils and boards and things that you have volunteered and been appointed to. Would you say that you have the most of those positions out of the county commissioners currently?
I would say currently I do, as the chair of the board of county commissioners. Then you tend to be on more of those and lead those. And so, yes. So at this point in time, I would say there's probably about 15 to 20 that I'm on.
Yeah. And just to let everybody know, these are huge commitments. They may not seem like it. And, you know, in the past, there have been county commissioners who have been part of those boards who don't attend or, you know, who disappear in the middle of the night. But I've been looking at some of your attendance records, and I see that Ms. Cuny, you have an almost perfect attendance, and almost all of the ones where you didn't attend, there was specific excusable events. So, you know, I think I can say that I've seen the record of being one of the hardest working commissioners that Spokane has had in a good long while.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's one of those things that if you're going to commit to it, you need to be there and you need to show up. And otherwise, you can't help in making good decisions for those organizations. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And that's just a fact. That's just, you know, it's just what it is. You know, it's not necessarily a high praise. I mean, it is, but it's just a fact. It's something that's been happening. Okay, so let's move in to the fact that now Spokane Valley, mostly the Southern Valley, is your new district. So we would really like to hear, you know, what do you feel like your district's priorities are? So we've got a lot of Spokane Valley voters here listening to this. What do you think their priorities are at the county level?
Well, so I think the priorities are still public safety is just the number one priority. And so the Valley is still part of, you know, Spokane County Sheriff's Department. We contract, the city of Spokane Valley contracts with the Sheriff's Department. And so it's making sure that they have the equipment, the things that they need to be successful. So public safety is definitely a priority for me. And we've seen that. The sheriff knows it. That's why I'm endorsed by Sheriff Ozzy Knezovich. I'm endorsed by Undersheriff John Knowles. Because they know my true commitment to public safety, as well as to any of the first responders. It's so important, you know, that we have everything we need for the fire departments. Through CARES dollars, we made sure that they had additional equipment that they needed. And so that was a priority for me. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I think Spokane Valley Firefighters Union endorsed me in this race. And they've, Spokane Fire District 8 has also done that. Because really, you know, that is a priority for our citizens. You know, during my time as commissioner, we went to the combined communication center. So what we call SHREC. And so when you call 911, it's now not getting diverted to other organizations. It's one organization that is doing that for the entire community. The city of Spokane has chosen maybe not to participate as much. Now their fire department is choosing to come in, but those are the things that are really important for the community and for, I think Spokane Valley specifically, that we have better response time because of that. And so it's those innovative projects that the commissioners get to spearhead and then let the experts take over.
I'm glad you alluded to sometimes, you know, one of the issues I think we're going to talk about a little bit later here is how there can sometimes be some discongruities between the different municipalities around here. And you talked a little bit about that, but we'll come back to that. And I think that those are some important priorities for Spokane Valley voters. I've been hearing that from a lot of folks, especially about crime and issues related to crime. How would you plan, you know, and we talked a little bit about this in how you build consensus, but how would you plan to balance those priorities against kind of like the priorities of the county at large?
Well, I think it's going to be looking at it again, what is the priority for my district? And then looking at the greater good of the community and figuring out how you do balance those. You know, so I will say like the golf courses for Spokane County, all three golf courses are in my district. So I'm going to need to have, you know, as we look at funding parks and look at what the needs are, I'm going to need to be able to get consensus from some of the other commissioners to be able to put funding into that. But just because the parks are in my district, it is something that benefits the entire community. And so those are the things that I think you've got to, you know, find those points and balance that.
That absolutely makes sense. And I'm glad to know who to complain to when my, you know, when my grass isn't short enough and, you know, my tee box isn't repaired. So just, I'm glad to know that.
Yes, exactly. You know who to call.
Yeah, very good. So that makes a lot of sense, right? Is finding those leverage points whereby the county shares some commonalities that you can use to sort of leverage, hey, this is important to not just me, it's important to you too.
Well, and I can give you another example is the Doris Morrison Learning Center that is going to be going in at the Saltese Flats. We worked really hard. You know, that was a commitment when the Spokane County over 10 years ago bought the property from Bud and then Morrison for, you know, for potential, you know, putting of wastewater treatment, treated wastewater, you know, if mm-hmm. it couldn't go into the river. So hopefully we never have to use it, but we have now, you know, another option. Mm-hmm. But with that, you know, Central Valley was going to combine and do this whole learning center, and then they moved the high school ridge line up by the freeway. Mm-hmm. So with that, it left us this, what are we going to do? And we only committed $900,000. So I spent 2 years going and asking the state legislature for capital funding. And the one who really championed it was Representative Mike Foles out of the 6th District, which, you know, this sits in the 4th District. But Mike really understood the need, understood the value to the entire community. And so we did this as a community project. Mm. Will it benefit my district primarily? Yes, but it's really going to benefit the entire community. So, right. So that's just another way of, you know, how you have something in my district, but you leverage and you talk to people outside your district because it really is going to be beneficial to the entire community.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I want to pull out another string that you kind of briefly mentioned. You talked about, you know, crime being a priority and working with the upcoming sheriff. I think that this is kind of where the county's government, and specifically for the county commissioners, things are a little bit unique compared to some of the city governments. There are a lot of elected officials within the county government that kind of fall like in this weird sort of tree where the county commissioners are sort of in charge, but you know, and I think it's best for you to explain that relationship to us. And for our listeners here, we're talking about the sheriff, for instance, the county prosecutor, the assessor, the auditor. You know, these are all officials that are all separately elected. So it's not like the county commissioners can fire them or anything like that. But there is this you know, pseudo subordination, I suppose you could say. Tell us a little bit about that.
I would say kind of, you know, sometimes there's a little push pull that goes on with that. Mm. You know, so with that, yes. So we, as the county commissioners, the only thing that we control in their offices is the budget. Mm. So when we approve the budget at the end of the year, then we're basically saying, okay, this is how much you get based on, as we look at the budget for the entire county, each department gets. And so you have to live within your means within your department. Otherwise, just like any other person, they've got to come back, department head, they've got to come back to us to request additional funding. Hmm. But we don't get to tell the sheriff how to run his office. Hmm. You know, we don't get to tell the assessor how he's going to go and assess property.
Except through the budget, right?
except through the budget. We can either fund, you know, different opportunities or not. Like in the assessor's office, I'll say we worked really hard to get electronic filing from the building and permitting side that then could go directly to the assessor's office. So they didn't have to recreate all those drawings. When I became commissioner, they were back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And so having that ability to look beyond departments and see how we can, you know, kind of weave them together, that's beneficial to everybody. But Tom Conis, who's the assessor, still runs his office. We don't have any say. He's got to come and ask us, or, you know, or we're having those conversations as how can we help? What can we do with other departments that intersect with him that can make his operation more efficient? Hmm. And again, like with the sheriff, the judges, you know, we have no say, but there's so many RCWs. I mean, the state legislature is passing laws and regulations that those are what are having the effect on those individual electeds. Hmm. You know, as we know with police reform.
So we're talking about unfunded mandates and also extreme restrictions.
Yes. A lot of that is coming from the state. That is not coming from the county commissioners. And sometimes people get that confused, but those are state regulations that are being placed upon those other electeds. Again, we're really just in charge of the budget for those departments. And so they do have to come and justify to the county commissioners the needs for those dollars.
And just as a question that I think will be a little bit more pertinent later, can the county somehow eliminate those regulations? Can you guys just, you know, like, you know?
We take an oath to uphold the state law of the U.S. Constitution, the Washington State Constitution, and the laws of the state. And so we don't have the ability to go against the laws of the state of Washington.
That makes
we can try to push back. We can try to advocate for change, but we still take an oath that we will uphold the laws of the state of Washington as well as the, you know, United States. And so those are things that you can be recalled on if you violate state law.
Well, that makes an unfortunate amount of sense, but it is what it is.
Yes.
Well, let's dig into some of the specific issues that are going on and how they relate to the county and your opinions about those issues. So we talked a little bit about crime and law enforcement as being something that's very important and how it's growing across Spokane County. Why do you think, as a person running for office, why do you think that this is happening?
I think there's several things that are happening. I mean, we have definitely, I think the legislature has the laws that they've enforced or enacted are having a huge effect. I think, you know, the pursuit law that hasn't changed, you know, that they put on police that you can't pursue, that's detrimental to our community.
And just to be clear, what we're talking about here is a law that was passed in 2020 in the legislative session then that it didn't specifically state that police cannot pursue people, but it basically eliminating somebody running as being a probable cause rationale for a police officer to pursue them. So it basically, it made the area so gray that a lot of police officers can no longer pursue folks. And that law, I think it's on the docket to be repealed, but it hasn't yet.
Well, and they could have chosen to repeal it in 2021 and they didn't. Because there were some additional laws then that they did make changes, minor changes to. One of the other things that happened was the Blake decision, which was overturned by the state Supreme Court. So that was a case out of Spokane County for drug, you know, simple drug possession. So basically, it's made it legal for you to have possessed drugs, you know, a small amount. And so where in the past, if you were pulled over and you had drugs, they could arrest you. They're not doing that now, which, again, I would say, you know, as a citizen and as a mother, you know, from kids in high school and college, it's like possession of drugs. It's like if you have illegal drugs, it leads to other things that are not good. And as we're seeing with the fentanyl crisis and the Mexican drugs that are coming across the border, you know, being the medical examiner is part of us. So as we see these overdoses, these are things that are not okay. And so I think that we're going to see our sheriff's department, you know, really try to see what they can do to understand, you know, what's happening in the drug world. And, you know, I will say in the medical examiner's case, you know, they would have to send the toxicology reports off to the Washington State labs. And so it would take months. So we use, so we, the county commissioners, and I was spearheading this, that we wanted to get that into Spokane County now. So we put together, there's test kits that we did through ARP, our ARP dollars, that the medical examiner now has the equipment to actually test that and get some of that information right away. So we can get that information to law enforcement. We can give that comfort to those families so they know what happened. And those are things that are invaluable.
Yeah, that's really something that happened recently, right? 2020, was that right?
Yes. Well, we just it's just going to be starting here for us. We just did the ARP dollar distribution to them so that they've got the test kits. So this is going to be a new tool for law enforcement.
And you said you championed that, right?
I did. I wanted to make sure that we made that happen. It's because I had family members calling me saying, Mary, my, you know, friend's daughter, you know, had, it was an overdose, but we're not going to know what was from for months. That doesn't give those families comfort, nor again, does it give law enforcement the ability to go after those drug dealers right away. So why it's really important.
Yeah, I can see that. That does sound like a major change, and something that definitely helps law enforcement. You know, I know from my previous interviews with Deputy Knowles and some of the other folks that exactly what you said. The two issues that you brought up are issues that are being highlighted both by the prosecutor's office, the sheriff's office, and now I'm hearing it here at the county level. So now that we've highlighted some of the problems, and I'm glad you brought up one of the solutions, one of the things that you're bringing to the table to try and make things better. What other things do you think that the county commissioners could push for, especially in the budget, you know, that could maybe help resolve this issue?
Well, I think, you know, we've over the last few years, we've really upped the staffing at the sheriff's department level. So at the, you know, getting new deputies on the streets. Hmm. And I know we're still behind. We're still working to fill all those positions. So part of what the county commissioners did is we did incentive pay, hiring bonuses. So that way we could get, you know, lateral transfers happening. This is the first time that we've had laterals from the city of Spokane. We made sure we got those salaries up so that we weren't losing people to the city of Spokane or to other districts. So those are the things, because you've got to have the people to do the work. And so that's in the sheriff's department. That's been a huge priority for me, to make sure that we've got those, the ability to do that. And I know we worked hard, you know, under Sheriff Knowles and the sheriff and I worked hard to figure out what was going to be the best mechanism for that. We talked about retention bonuses, which I don't think always work. And so it was that, you know, let's get those salaries where they need to be. So that way then we're not having this issue going forward. And law enforcement in general has seen a decrease in people wanting to get into the field. So we had to figure out what's the incentive to bring people in. So those are some of the really important things. And then, I know, like I talked about with Under Sheriff John Knowles, you know, really want to do community policing, which is going to be an important piece to have a deputy in your community that you know and can trust, and he knows what's going on. And so, but it still takes having those people employed, you know, and getting them hired to do that. So that really to me is first and foremost, to make sure we were doing that.
That makes sense. Of course, there is the sticky question. This is the one that I think a lot of folks really want to know about. I've heard calls from this from several of the sheriff's candidates. I've heard calls from this from the prosecutor, and we've been kind of flirting with this idea for years now, which is a new jail. You know, it's a massive expenditure, but from what I hear, it's also a massive problem, the current jail, that is. So I guess I have to ask the question, are you in favor of funding that new jail? Why or why not?
Well, we need a new facility. I like to say we need a new facility. What we have downtown is a maximum security jail. And we have to have, you know, kind of those step down models. So that way, you know, you've got your maximum security for the people that need to be there, but then you also have then, kind of a community correction center for people that don't need to be in that maximum security. So you can get them programming and services that are going to help them be successful as they come out and help them kind of figure out why they got there. And so that's what I truly believe we need, is that a new facility that has those other programming options, because our current jail does not have those programming options downtown. It just, you know, it's just there's no space for it and all of that. And so, yes, so I do think we need a new facility. And I think that will go to the voters, for the voters to decide, because I think it's really going to take, you know, it's going to be a lot of money. There's different numbers. You know, we haven't finalized any plans or any of that at this point in time.
And so the facility that you're talking about, which, by the way, I heard also proposed by Sheriff candidate Knowles. I've also heard that proposed similarly by prosecutor's candidate Larry Haskell. Really similar ideas to what you're talking about. This is very different than even the last iteration of the plans that we had on file, which I think were voted on in 2019, I want to say. So we're really talking about a whole from the ground up new plan. So I guess that breeds the question of when, now that we're all in favor of it, when's it going to happen?
Well, I think we've got to get to the five commissioners, because they're going to be weighing in on it. And so I think there was a little bit of, you know, what, if, you know, COVID, I think we were really starting to focus and get, go down that way path back in 2018, 19. Since I've been commissioner in 17, there's never been a vote on it by the public, but the planning was really starting to, you know, take shape in 2019 before COVID, and then COVID hit. And so then I think there was a little bit of pivot, I will say, at this point in time. And now it's time to pivot back. But with the knowing the five commissioners were coming, it's going to be, you know, next year that we will be looking at it and hopefully have some more design. I know, you know, our staff is working on that, what it's going to look like. and get the buy-in to get it on the ballot, because I think it's going to be important. Because every time we delay, it's, you know, we know by the time you get it approved, start construction, all those things, we're going to be, you know, 5 to 8 years, 10 years down the road before it's actually final. So it's important that over the next, I would say the next year, that we really get a major plan in place and start to move forward with it.
Okay. Strong words. I like it. Yeah. We've got some action coming. And I'm glad that we're talking about the jail, because in a lot of ways, the jail is kind of the intersection between homelessness and crime, which sometimes are the same thing, sometimes not necessarily. But a lot of that intersection does end up happening at the jail. And a lot of the criticisms of the current jail is that a lot of homeless folks are flooding into the jail, which some people say is good, getting them off the street. Other people say, oh, well, they're taking up room. You know, there's a lot of discussion there. But that kind of brings us to the problem of homelessness in general. Would you agree that homelessness is a huge problem for the county? Is that something that you've been looking at?
It's a huge problem for our community. You know, so I wouldn't say just specific, you know, if I look at the county as just the unincorporated, I wouldn't say as much for the unincorporated, but, you know, all the cities are within Spokane County.
Right.
And it's a huge problem for the city of Spokane. And what people don't know, I guess I'll say two things. So as we look at the criminal justice system, when you know, there's so many things that are attached to the criminal justice system. It's the sheriff's office. It's the prosecutor's office. It's the judges. Mm. It's the public defender's office and our clerk's office. Mm. So anytime you do one thing that affects that, it's like dropping a pebble in a pond and watching the ripple effects. And so you have to be very careful and cognizant of that. And so a new jail is part of that piece. How do we address homelessness as part of that ripple effect? And so one of the things in homelessness that we did too is last year stood up the Crisis Stabilization Center. And that was something that was very important to me to make sure that we did it right. So that way we weren't putting a burden on our taxpayers. The state legislature came through with some funding for the capital part of it. But I wanted to make sure as we stood that up that the county wasn't using general fund dollars to fund it. And so our provider in there is being able to bill the insurance companies for that. And so if those people were to end up in our jail system, so if I've got a homeless person that's trespassing and they go, instead of going into our jail, costing us, you know, $140 a night.
And that's on the low end. That's the yes. That's the direct cost. There's actually a lot of hidden costs on top of that. But yeah.
Very true. But then their insurance doesn't carry with them. So then it's all on Spokane County to pay their insurance bills.
Exactly. So that's part of the hidden costs that I was talking about. Because my numbers show that an incarceration can cost up to $700 per night when all included. But anyway, continue.
Yes. But if I can get them so they're not in our jail system and I can get them over to our Crisis Stabilization Center, so either for mental health purposes, we have 16 beds for that, or we have 16 beds for substance abuse purposes. And then we also have holdover beds. Now, then they're with the provider that's providing services to them and they're billing their insurance company. So I'm not using our taxpayer dollars to fund that.
Right.
So that's an important piece for me as a CPA, someone who wants to protect your tax dollars. That was very important to me to make sure that as we did that along the way, we made sure that they could fund themselves.
Right. That's something that I've also spoken about on this program as well, is often deferring costs to the lowest cost solution. Because as you say, the jail is not usually the lowest cost solution. In fact, it's one of the higher cost solutions for taking care of homeless folks.
Well, and they're not going to get, you know, we have mental health and we have, you know, medical in our jail system, but it's very different than what you see over at the Crisis Stabilization Center, where they've got that 24/7, you know, right there. It's fewer beds. And so those people are really going to get the services they need to get healthy and to be, come back into our community and be successful.
Right.
And that's where, you know, to me, that's that programming side that we need in our jail system. But we have that at the stabilization center for these people, so they really can get the help they need, and then have the holdover beds available for them to wait until something is available for them to go into.
Right.
So it's, to me, it's really a win-win situation. And it gets people so they're not then arrested, you know, so they get to divert over to that crisis stabilization and they don't have that on their record.
Right. Now, I'm glad that we kind of addressed one of the specific solutions the county is looking at for a very specific costing problem that, that involves homelessness. And I think that that's important. But I also kind of want to address, you know, some of the bigger problems, some of the generalities. Now, I think that the microcosm of Camp Hope, I know I just said I want to address the generals, but I think that the microcosm of Camp Hope is a good example of where the general problem that I think that we're seeing with regard to this homelessness problem that, that involves that there's many municipalities here. There's many governments here. There's the county government. There's the city government, which you mentioned. There's the state government when we're talking about Camp Hope. There's many governments here. And it seems to me as a layperson that many of those governments are clashing. So first I'd like to ask, the sheriff has come in and proposed to take action and clear Camp Hope. You know, and we talked a little bit earlier about the jurisdictional issue, you know, how the primary jurisdiction is under the Spokane Police. But that doesn't mean that the sheriff doesn't have co-primary jurisdiction because it is within the county. But do you agree with that solution? Do you support that solution?
I think we're seeing it as a need. And so I am supporting that solution. So I'm, you know, supporting Ozzy in his endeavor here. We are, you know, I'll say the county commissioners had to come along beside him. It is going to be going to a judge on November 10th to, you know, see if the nuisance abatement is, that judge is going to allow that. We have hundreds of affidavits from businesses and citizens that live around Camp Hope saying that it's a nuisance. We know the crime is up. I mean, we've heard that. We've seen it in the paper. We've seen it on the news. We know that that's a fact. I want to be compassionate. And I don't think after seeing our weather this last weekend, having these people stay in tents is compassionate when we have space available for them to go to. Mm. We can expand the Trent shelter and have it kind of be a navigation center to get these people into the services and the housing that they need for the future. That's going to be a warm, safe, dry place for them to be. Where they're at, you know, because this started back in, you know, January of last year. Mm-hmm. And you know, has grown as it got warmer, you know, through the spring and the summer. This isn't okay to do, continue into the winter. You know, we know that this, from the National Weather Service, you know, we've been told this is going to be a third year of a La Nina year. So it's going to be colder and wetter. I can't, you know, in good conscience, let these people stay there when, right. Again, we have space that, you know, because with the new Trent shelter, they can expand that and they can provide that navigation that these people need. So I am support because I think it's compassionate for the people. You know, we can keep them together as a community there at Trent, you know, as we work to get them into other options. I think it's compassionate to our citizens that are living in that area. I know the Fred Meyer store, I worry that they may shut down. I used to shop there. I don't shop there anymore.
Right.
So those are the things that are happening that would be devastating to that East Central neighborhood if we lose the Fred Meyer store.
Right.
You know, because then they no longer have a walkable store to go to. Yeah. And so those are the things you've got to look at the whole community. And again, you know, not just each individual person individually, we've got to look at how does it all braid together? And what are we doing to really help these people? And so I think that you'll see over the next week or so that, you know, since the sheriff has made that announcement,
yeah,
we're starting to see things happen. We're starting to see people come together to, instead of just sitting there saying, no, we're not going to, you know, we can't do that.
Yeah,
I think the sheriff is really making that happen, and I'm in full support.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The county really came in with action on this one, you know, and through the sheriff. But stepping back for a second, what you were just talking about, how people were saying no, I think this is where folks really want to hear your take on this, because my take and what I've reported on here on the show in the past is that we have a lot of kind of intragovernmental fights about this homelessness issue. We have very many governmental agencies. We've got the continuum of care. We've got 40 or 50 NGOs operating here. We've got Spokane City has its own set of grants and contracts and other kinds of things. Spokane Valley has now announced that they'd like to step into the fray and perhaps even start their own homelessness shelter. So how do we get this mess under control? You know, do you favor having a one-stop approach, having a regionalized, centralized approach? Or do you think it actually is best that each one of these municipalities just kind of goes off on their own and tries to figure this problem out?
Well, I think we've tried, I think we're going to need to look at it from a regional approach. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. No different than our emergency communication center. You know, we're going to do better when we really come together and do it right. You know, in the past, you know, we would get funding through the federal government, through the state, that would come down to Spokane County, that we were, you know, City of Spokane Valley was part of our funding that we would get. And then we would take that funding and we would give it to the City of Spokane, because over 10 years ago, the determination was made that it would be better to have it be closer to the services and have the City of Spokane help do that. So they were doing it for, sometimes they want to say it was just the City of Spokane, but they were doing it for the community at large. And we were giving millions of dollars to the City of Spokane. Mm-hmm. So how, you know, with everything, you know, COVID kind of changed things, it seemed like, you know, Spokane County used the CARES dollar, our CARES dollars. So we provided the funding for Salvation Army to buy the Way Out shelter. Mm-hmm. We provided funding to the Cannon shelter to be a 24/7 shelter instead of just an emergency shelter. So we put millions of dollars into services in the City of Spokane. And so we really were already looking at it from a regional perspective, but the continuum of care is kind of its own organization that the feds, you know, federal government through the HUD department, you know, requires. And so, but the City of Spokane looks at the continuum of care differently than Spokane County. And so there are these little, you know, differences that we see. And I really think too, if we really come together in a regional government approach for that, you know, whether that's kind of like a PDA, public development authority, where we're really looking at it and have everybody at the table.
You're talking about establishing a PDA, right?
Yes, that would be the possibility as one option. But then it takes it out of government and we let the people that are the subject matter experts really run it and do it. But they have to understand that there's limited funding. You know, the funding is still coming from the feds and the state.
For our folks at home, are we talking about establishing a PDA as a special district, or are we talking about establishing a PDA as an NGO?
So give me your definition of an NGO.
Well, I know that some counties have established a PDA as an actual incorporated PDA, whereby it's actually its own company, so to speak, separate than government authority. So it doesn't have any special district powers such as taxation or any of those other things. But I know that other counties have actually established it as a special district, whereby it does have some taxation powers on its own.
I think for my purpose, I would do a PDA and not have it have its own special taxing. I think that's, you know, I think that's the kind of thing that the state allows different options for taxing.
Right.
That if we wanted to do a 1/10 for it, we could. You know, but I think we need to have, you know, a group that really the city, the county, the city, the valley, the other small towns really can feel this is the way to govern it. Mm-hmm. You know, so you've got to come together, you know, to figure out what does that governance structure look like? Mm-hmm. So that everyone feels like they got the input, but we're not letting politics play into it.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're saying that you will champion trying to bring these municipalities together through a PDA concept.
I think so. I mean, yes, I would, because I think that's how we're going to do this better than individually. And I think having two county commissioners that are going to be more city centric, mm-hmm. we're going to see that dynamic happen anyway. Mm. And so I really want to make sure that we're looking at, again, across the community to do what's best, because if we start doing all these little separate things, it's not going to work in my mind.
Well, it spreads the money a lot thinner.
It does. And that's part of why the Spokane County put the money into the city of Spokane. Right. Because every time somebody touches it, they take 10%, which is allowed by government for administrative purposes. Right. And so let's not, you know, we weren't taking that money. We were sending it directly to the city of Spokane. So more money gets directly to the people that need it instead of administering it.
Right. And that makes sense. That is also the position that I have advocated for here on this program, the exact position that you're taking. I think that that's right. We need a centralized solution, whether that solution is housed in the city of Spokane or whether that solution is housed in a PDA. But if it's housed in one of the municipalities, that municipality needs to participate, which I think was one of the problems in the past, was that it was housed in the city of Spokane, but they often really didn't participate in talking to anybody else and focused only on their own needs. So I, like you say, I think that there's some changes that are needed in the next approach that we take.
Yeah. And they have different city ordinances than I think the rest of us would look at. So, I mean, that's why really looking at it from a region, I think, is important so that it's a balanced approach. And, you know, I think then you're going to have providers coming to the table, because the providers all do different things. They all look at it from a little bit different perspective. Mm-hmm. And so I think instead of feeling like the providers are competing, they would be able to come together and be looking at it for the greater good of the community.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's move on. I'm glad to hear that. Let's move on to some budgetary issues, some budgetary concerns. Now, I'm glad that you mentioned your previous work history, because I know that I've heard you called a budget nerd before. Don't take that offensively. But I'm glad to be talking to you about this. I think a lot of folks are probably most concerned about the 1% property tax increase, which is something that is allowed every year by Washington State. So let's start there. How do you think that 1% increase should be handled?
Well, I think it's a tough thing. You know, this year we had a huge increases in assessed values.
Right.
But I think what people don't understand is that Spokane County, when your tax bill comes to you, Spokane County doesn't get most of that tax money. Most of that tax money we're seeing go to the state for the new school levy that they put together when they did their McCleary fix.
Right.
We're seeing the school districts, local school districts, get a large chunk. I don't have the numbers in front of me, so I apologize. But
that's okay. I have covered that in the show before.
Okay. You know, and your fire districts. I mean, the school districts and the fire districts and the state school levy is really the biggest portion. And so then the county gets a pretty small portion of the property taxes. And yes, in the past, I can't remember what the initiative was, but it limited property tax increase to 1%. In the past, commissioners could go higher than that. So we are limited to 1%. In Spokane County, that 1% property tax equates to $650,000. That is not enough to cover the costs of salary increases, cost of living increases. As you can imagine, if you're running your own home or your own business, that's not enough to pay for anything. So for us, it is one way that when citizens are wanting those services, that's one of the few ways, other than, as I think I talked about earlier, sales tax revenue, and, you know, for us is the other way that we have regenerate our revenues. So you have to look at it from each budget cycle to say, what are the needs? You know, what are our expenses that we project? What are our revenues that we project? Do we need to take that 1% this year to cover those expenses? And we're very lean on our expenses. We're going through the budget cycle right now. And I know, you know, what everybody wants is not going to get in the budget, because we have to have a balanced budget. And so, you know, we're looking at where people's, you know, what they wanted for their budget and saying, okay, you still got to reduce that because we don't have enough money to cover all those costs. So, you know, so that's why the 1% then plays into it. Do we need to take that? you know, as additional tax revenue to then be able to provide the expense, you know, for the expenses for the services that our citizens demand. So it's something you have to look at every year. I will not take a stance on that. No new taxes at all, because I do know citizens want services and those services do cost money. And so I've got to figure out how do I work that budget, you know, whether from a revenue side or expense side, to figure out how to meet those needs.
So just thinking about another issue is, you know, the 1% tax increase. I mean, that's something that a lot of folks want to know about. So how is that going to be handled going forward? Should citizens have participation in that? What are your thoughts on that 1% tax increase?
So on the 1% tax increase, I think it's something that we have to look at every year as we move forward in the budget process. So, and during our current budget process, you know, we are not looking at having a 1% tax increase this year going into 2023. So that is what each of the three county commissioners, I will say, are looking at that very strongly, because we know that assessed values went up a lot. We know with inflation that that's something that we really don't want to put an additional burden on our taxpayers. So, but during our budget process, we do have three public forums that people can come down and talk to us and let us know what their thoughts are, what they want, what services are most important to them, or what their other thoughts are on revenues. So, and I do know we have heard a lot as the assessed values have gone out, advocating for seniors, that seniors are on fixed incomes. We need to take a look at that. And so we, and I will say each of us three commissioners at this point in time really are committed to making sure that that is on our legislative agenda, to go talk to the state legislature to raise the senior exemption for property taxes for our citizens in Spokane County.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that there are a lot of citizens in the county who worry about this, especially seniors on fixed incomes. For them, these taxes, you know, for somebody like myself who has a mortgage, the taxes kind of get buried into the payments that you're making to the bank. The bank kind of takes care of making sure that you're paying those taxes. I mean, your mortgage payments do go up. But, you know, overall, it's kind of taken care of for you. But for a lot of senior citizens, it hits them in one big splash twice a year. You know, and for some of them, going from $2,000 to $3,000 a year to $5,000 to $6,000 a year, that's a big difference, you know. And I think we're hearing that from a lot of them. So I'm glad to hear that's something that you're worried about as well.
No, and it is a huge difference. And we want to make sure that property taxes are not what's going to drive senior citizens out of their homes. And that's really important to me.
Very good. Very good. Speaking of another budgetary concern and something that you talked about a little bit, we have ARP funds, and ARP stands for American Rescue Plan. It's funny that we have an acronym for something that's going to go away so quickly. It's here and then it's gone. We don't even need an acronym. Let's call it American Rescue Plan. It was a bill that was passed during COVID to give cities and municipalities money to offset some of the costs of COVID and maybe even think about whether there's another wave coming and think about some of those solutions. Now, I know that the county commissioners have already – so the county got roughly $100 million for
Correct.
ARP, and I know some of that funding has gone out. So could you talk to us a little bit about how you feel – and I know you voted on this, but I mean still, how do you feel that funding was used? Do you feel like it was used in the best way possible? Do you think there could have been any differences? Would you have advocated for any differences?
Well, I think one thing that I want citizens to know is with the ARP dollars, the cities got, so Spokane County got $101 million for the county. But all the municipalities combined had just over that. So the cities in the ARP realm got just as much as the county did. And so we really wanted to focus, you know, we wanted to let the cities focus on the cities. And we really wanted to focus on what are the needs that we can help protect our citizens in the future. You know, there's different, you know, buckets that the federal government allowed for expenditures in. You know, it very different than what the CARES dollars were, you know, back in 2020. Those were immediate dollars to get out as quickly as possible. These are looking at what are the long-term solutions that we can do for Spokane County to, you know, kind of take care of things that maybe COVID helped, you know, shine a light on.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. So that's what we've done. And I don't have the list in front of me, but, you know, broadband was definitely one of those areas. And I went down to South, you know, Fairfield and had a town hall meeting for South County to say, what do you feel the needs of ARP dollars in these communities that we could use? And broadband was overwhelmingly one of the areas that was known that with, you know, Freeman and Liberty School districts down there, they didn't have the broadband to really do everything they wanted to do. And so that is a need that came out of me listening to the citizens in that area as to where they wanted to see some of those dollars spent.
I should jump in really quick and just make sure. I should have mentioned this earlier, but there were actual restrictions on how this American Rescue Plan funding could use. So it's not like you guys could have repaved all the streets, or there were a lot of things that you couldn't use the money for, and streets was one of them. But you could use them for utilities, including broadband. So that I just wanted to make sure to mention that.
Thank you. No, it's probably your restrictions that are like 3 inches thick of 8.5 by 11 pages, double-sided. Right. So right. There's a lot of restrictions. So as we navigated through that, so broadband was one of those sewer, different utility things that we could do. But we also still, some of the nonprofits that we're giving to workforce development, how to get people back into the workforce. We're hoping that here soon there's going to be some going to childcare. Again, childcare from the perspective of getting people back into the workforce. So helping those people that need it. We just did some affordable housing that we're going to get 230 new units, coming online here soon. So those are some of the things that we were using have chosen to use and spend our dollars on. Launch Northwest is one of the areas that we chose to. Spokane County came in first, City of Spokane Valley came in with some of their funding, City of Spokane came in with some of their funding. And again, so that was one of those regional approaches that we took to help Launch Northwest get up and going and the operations, because that's going to have a huge benefit to our citizens in the future. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that Promise Scholarship side, which is funded in a different way, not through government dollars, but it's also then the uses that they're going to use the government dollars are the wraparound services. And I think to me, this is one of the areas that if we spend those dollars wisely and can make this a success, those people are not going to be in my criminal justice system, because they're going to know that they have hope and opportunity to go off to a trade or to college and have a life. So those are some of the things that we used ARP dollars for. And that's how we looked at it. What are the one-time things that are going to have a benefit for our community and for our citizens?
That makes a lot of sense. Now, you did, I'm glad to hear those uses. But you did mention affordable housing, which I think, is both a good thing, but it's also can be a pain point for some of us here in Spokane Valley. So I'd like to talk a little bit about development, because one of the criticisms that a lot of Spokane Valley city residents have about the county are in the urban growth districts, which are basically the areas of the county that directly abut the city around the southern areas. And a good example would be, I think, are they called the Saltese Flats, where a lot of the houses are being built in between Sullivan and Barker that are technically on county land. Now, there have been a lot of criticisms by Spokane Valley residents about a lot of that construction, because it doesn't even really meet some of the meager qualifications that Spokane Valley has for construction. We see a lot of low-income apartments. We see a lot of unregulated streets. You know, going back to Saltese Flats, there's 7 miles of 25-mile-per-hour roads without a single arterial to bypass that entire area. So, something I've mentioned on this program before, if I live at the top of Saltese Flats, I'm probably driving for 20 minutes at 25 miles per hour, to try and get back to my house. And I just imagine that a lot of those folks probably don't go 25 miles per hour after a long, hard day of work. So I guess I would ask, You know, how do you feel about those developments? Is that something that should continue? Do you think the county should try and pass some development laws to bring it more in line with some of the requirements that are had by the Valley or by the city of Spokane even? You know, because that development does affect us in the city. Those folks do use our roads to come to work and go back home. Is that, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's a big question. As we look at right now, so the growth management boundaries were in effect when I became commissioner. So right. I think 2025 is when they would, you know, it was 2015 when they were set, and 2025 when they'll open back up, and they may open up a little sooner because of our population numbers or some triggers that could open it up a little sooner. Right. But those were already set as to what was already within the growth management boundaries. And so we're seeing the effects of what the planning took place back in 2015. And right. So those areas that border the county and the city of the Valley or the city of Spokane are kind of joint planning areas. Under growth management, those joint planning areas would be developed, you know, because they're within the growth management boundary, so they can be dense. Those could be developed, but then the cities were supposed to be annexing them. That was the whole thought process.
Right.
The cities have chosen not to annex them because they know that it's a higher cost per service than when they have commercial properties. And so it's really and this is state law that has caused us, you know, in this situation. So, I'm not in favor of all the laws associated with this. Would I like to change it? Yes. And I think we're trying to advocate at the state level, as well as the county commissioners across the state through WASAC. We have lots of issues with the Growth Management Act that we're wanting to actively change. And so those are some of the things that we are doing. I can tell you, I was just down in Houston. They have no zoning, and they seem to be able to figure it out. And it's the citizens that of Houston that have voted not to have zoning requirements. So again, you know, trying to get back to where our citizens should be making more choices than Olympia making those choices for us. And the Growth Management Act is definitely one of those that Olympia has forced upon us, because, you know, we're a border county where you can go to Idaho with completely different zoning. And so, yes. So as county commissioner for my district, as we look to open up those UGA boundaries, I will definitely be listening to the citizens, seeing what their inputs are, and working for them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's something I've brought up often here on the show, how growth management really came from a place of, I don't even know how to justify. I mean, I suppose it came from a place of trying to maintain environmentalism and not have overdevelopment, but it ends up doing the opposite for both of those things. And like you said, you know, the issue of annexation becomes kind of a problematic one, because the cities end up with areas on the borders of the cities just outside the city control where density can explode and you can have all kinds of different types of things that you wouldn't normally have in the city. And then the city is supposed to annex it, which is a huge cost nightmare. So I'm glad you brought up some of those problems. But I'm also glad to hear that it's something you're looking to work closer with the city of Spokane Valley to make sure that we can kind of figure out a better balance. Because right now it seems like things get built right on the borders of the city, new low-income apartment complexes or trailer parks or things like that that impact folks right on the other side of the border, and there's no say for those folks.
No, and part of the other thing with affordable housing is having, you know, the ability to be able to buy into a condo. And the state laws on condo regulations are horrible. And so, you know, we can't have our young people, you know, be able to buy into a condo. They have to rent, which means their rent can continue to go up instead of being able to get into a condo and have a mortgage that then is steady. So right. That they
and
know
also,
how to
and also buy into the community by what you're saying, where they would actually be owning something, which means that they care about that thing that they own, as opposed to, well, I'm here for a little while.
Right. And then you develop equity in it, which then is how you get to start to own, you know, start a small business. If you don't have equity, it's hard to get that cash to, you know, in your bank account. where that equity provides that, you know, ability to then leverage that to start a small business. So there's so many good things that happen when we can have people in housing that they can afford.
That makes a lot of sense. So, okay, let's I kind of want to touch on your opponent a little bit, some of the criticisms that your opponent has levied, you know, because I think we've covered a lot of great things during this interview, but, you know, I think it would be remiss of me to not touch on that. So your opponent has criticized the county, and it often reiterates that there are just, quote unquote, too many regulations. Would you agree with that statement?
I would not agree with that statement. The regulations that we have are placed upon us by the state legislature, not by Spokane County. Spokane County tries to be very friendly to being able to help people, you know, start a business. We don't have a B&O tax, all those things. You know, again, the county only does the property tax and sales tax. So really to try to put the least amount of burden on our businesses, because we want businesses to succeed. That's how you get, you know, people that have jobs, you know, all of that to help feed the economy and have people thrive. So at Spokane County, since I've been commissioner, I can tell you that there has not been a chance, you know, I have not voted to put additional regulations onto any of our citizens or our businesses.
So, I mean, you've been at some forums with your opponent, correct? Unfortunately, I've been unable to find a recorded forum between you two that I could reference for our listeners, but maybe you could enlighten us a little bit. Have you ever heard your opponent mention any direct regulations that he wants to eliminate? Do you have any opinions on any of the things that he said about that?
Yeah, no, I have not. I've been in one forum with my opponent for the Splash in the Current we did at Ridgeline High School not too long ago, and regulations did not come up. So I don't know what he's talking about, what he thinks. So I can't speak to that.
Okay.
But I'd be interested to know what he thinks regulations we can take away.
Absolutely. And we will be having him on the show. Both of these interviews will be airing at the same time. So listeners, you can just tune into the other one right now and figure out what he wants to say. As a second question, you know, I found a curious interview where your opponent, who's been endorsed by Mr. Matt Shane and Caleb Collier. So he was on Caleb Collier's program where Caleb had mentioned that he had been anointed by God. And I don't know if this is a reference to him being a minister, but he had mentioned that people want politicians who are anointed by God. Do you have any response to that?
So I think I want to clarify. Did Caleb say that Mr. Noble was anointed by God, or that Mr. Collier was?
That's a great question. The direct quote was that people want politicians who are anointed by God. He made a reference to people don't want politicians who are just politicians. They want politicians who are anointed by God, such as, and then he pointed to Mr. Noble. So,
well, I find that very interesting. I think citizens, the people that I have talked to, want somebody who's going to represent them, who is going to listen to them, and who is going to do the right thing for the community. Do I believe in God? Yes, I'm Catholic. Happy to say that. But my goal is to do what's right for our community and listen to my citizens.
Very good. Very good. That makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I'm a true constitutionalist. I believe that our founding fathers actually had some strong counter ideas to having politicians anointed by God, such as kings. So I'm not sure how I feel about that one myself.
Yeah. And I can tell you, when I'm out there talking to citizens, I have not had somebody ask me if I was anointed by God, what my religious beliefs, I mean, every now and then it'll come up as to what my religious belief is. But for the most part, I would say that rarely comes up. And people really want to know what my values, what drives me, so they know that those are the decisions that I'll be making in the future.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, well, I think we've really kind of expansively covered all of the main issues here for this race. But as always, I would like to leave the last word for you to say to citizens whatever you would like to say.
Well, I guess I would just like to say that it's been a pleasure to be your county commissioner for the last, you know, since October of 2017. You know, running again this time, again, as we talked about that, this district will have a 4-year term. So whoever gets elected has a 4-year term.
Bit of a break.
Yes. And so I would ask that, you know, you listen and research and know that I will continue to do a great job for you here in Spokane Valley into the future and ask for your vote.
All right. Very much appreciate that. Ms. Mary Cuny, thank you for your time. Folks who are listening to Spokane Valley Speaks, as always, thank you for listening to this program. I know these interviews are very detailed and they provide you a lot of information. So make sure that you're sharing these interviews with your friends, your loved ones, people around you. This is an important race, as all races are, but this is an extremely important one, especially given the transition to the new county system. The folks who we elect right now to county commissioners are really going to define how that system works. And I think it's important for us to realize that and recognize that and select a county commissioner, select county commissioners for your districts that work best and who have cool level heads who are going to be able to make sure that that happens. So with that, tune into the next episode. Hopefully you're doing that right now to listen to the other candidate running for office. And as always, we will see you next time here on Spokane Valley Speaks.